ABC News, World News, This Week. And I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
The nomination of Clarence Thomas of Georgia to be Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court is hereby confirmed.
It was no getting away from this guy. He was all over the place. He was in front of the cafeteria, to the side of the cafeteria, and then I heard him into the kitchen, firing in the kitchen.
I'm saying that we're sorry that Clayton Harvey was accused of this incident when we didn't have clear and convincing evidence.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
When you give blood, you give another birthday, another summer vacation, another concert, another date, another dance, another day at the beach, another night under the stars. When you give blood, you give another holiday with the family. Another sunset after supper. Another talk with a best friend. Another laugh. Another hug. Another chance. This is Randy Travis for the American Red Cross. Please give blood.
A public service message from the Ad Council.
President Bush went golfing, but like millions of other people across the country, he was mesmerized by the event taking place in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing room.
And I brought a little set so I can tune in from hole to hole.
Can you really?
Yeah, no, it's a little radio.
And if you tried to reach your representative on Capitol Hill to express your feelings about the proceedings, you likely were disappointed.
We're sorry. All circuits are busy now. Will you please try your call again later?
What was going on, of course, was the hearing on the nomination of Clarence Thomas to be the next justice of the Supreme Court.
We have two very credible people with very, very diverse positions.
The positions mentioned by Committee Chairman Joseph Biden were the accusations by Professor Anita Hill and the denial by the nominee. Both sides paraded their witnesses. Among those, for Professor Hill, Susan Horschner.
She told me that she was being subjected to sexual harassment from her boss, to whom she referred by name. That boss was Clarence Thomas.
Among the judge's defenders, his former secretary at EEOC, Diane Holt.
Chairman Thomas, that I have known for 10 years, is absolutely incapable of the abuses described by Professor Hill.
As the testimony went on, the nominee's chief supporter, Republican Senator John Danforth of Missouri, said a couple of conclusions could be drawn.
One explanation is somebody's lying. There is an alternative explanation. The alternative explanation is that it's a fantasy.
The debate went from committee room to the floor of the full Senate, where senators like Democrat Robert Byrd of West Virginia chose sides.
I believe Anita Hill. I believe what she said.
But as far as Illinois Democrat Alan Dixon was concerned,
a decision on this nomination cannot be made on sexual harassment grounds. Instead, it must be made on the issues that have been before the Senate for the past 100 days and more.
And apparently that's how most of the senators made up their minds. Vice President Dan Quayle, on hand in case he needed to break a tie, announced the result.
On this vote, the yeas are 52 and the nays are 48. The nomination of Clarence Thomas of Georgia to be Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court is hereby confirmed.
Never had any successful nominee received as many negative votes as Judge Thomas did. And at her home in Norman, Oklahoma, Anita Hill told reporters,
"Well, I really don't want to comment on the vote. After the vote, I thought, I really wasn't focused on the vote. I was thinking about this week, and I don't have any comment."
Well-wishers gathered in the rain outside the Thomas home in Alexandria, Virginia, where the judge told the crowd,
"This is a time for healing in our country, that we have to put these things behind us, that we have to go forward, and that we have to begin to look for ways to solve problems that I think became apparent through this process and certainly have been apparent in our country for some time. But this is more time for healing, not a time for anger or for animus or animosity.
Those sentiments were quite different from those the judge expressed during the hearings.
This is high-tech lynching. I cannot shake off these accusations because they play to the worst stereotypes we have about black men in this country.
Several black members of Congress were not pleased to hear the judge describe himself as a victim of racism. As for the woman who leveled the charges of sexual harassment against him,
from the calls and letters that I'm getting, a lot of people have heard the story, and they understand it. In particular, a lot of women have called me, and they have empathized with my situation. They've been in that situation themselves, and so that part I do feel good about.
The country in general, and the Senate in particular, did not feel good about how the Thomas hearings played with the public. As Ohio Democrat Howard Metzenbaum put it,
there is no argument that these hearings will be remembered as unfortunate, unsenatorial, and at times just plain ugly. Inappropriate things were said and done. Allegations and innuendos and malicious charges were tossed about.
Ed Rollins says he's not surprised. Rollins is a Republican campaign strategist.
We are in a political game. It's gotten very nasty. I'm not advocating in any way, shape, or form that it should continue to be nasty, but we're not judging people on their qualifications. We are in a partisan game. We are all in it. We have divided government. We control the White House as Republicans. The Democrats control the Senate and the House, and any time they can get a political advantage, it's going to happen.
Republicans and Democrats are calling for improvements in the confirmation process. Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah points to the release of a confidential report which contained the sexual harassment charges against Judge Thomas.
The process itself was just lousy. Not because the way it was set up was lousy, but because somebody dishonestly and unethically released FBI report that should have been discussed before the final vote.
Senate Democratic Leader George Mitchell agrees that something must be done.
It has been alleged that confidential information was leaked to the press. I don't know what happened, but I'm going to try to find out. And if I can determine the identity of the person who did it, I'm going to try to see that the person is appropriately punished.
A measure has already been introduced authorizing the FBI to investigate the leak. President Bush is offering his help.
I think I owe the people my observations and, more importantly, some suggestions to improve the process. That comes under the heading of the Senate's business, clearly, but I have some views, and there is some interaction between the administration, obviously, and the Senate.
For one thing, Mr. Bush thinks the accusations of sexual harassment should have been examined by the Judiciary Committee in private rather than aired publicly. As for Judge Thomas, he has started going through the process that will terminate with his assuming the ninth seat on the Supreme Court.
I, Clarence Thomas, do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
In a ceremony at the White House, Judge Thomas took the first of two oaths needed to become a member of the High Court. His final judicial oath is scheduled to be administered on November 1st. Even as Thomas was getting ready to join the court, President Bush's nominee to head the CIA, Robert Gates, was passing muster in the Senate Intelligence Committee.
11 yeas and 4 nays is the vote, and the nomination is reported favorably to the Senate.
Where smooth sailing is not a foregone conclusion. Although Georgia Democrat Sam Nunn voted for Gates in the committee,
I have serious reservations primarily about the signal being sent to the men and women in the intelligence community about how you get to the top in this town.
Gates is under fire for allegedly hiding the truth about the Iran-Contra affair and slanting intelligence reports while he was number two at the CIA in the 1980s. Meantime, another presidential nominee is up for Senate confirmation.
I am proud today to send Bill Barr's name to the Senate.
William Barr has been the acting Attorney General since Dick Thornburgh stepped down to run for the Senate. Police and ambulances headed for a Luby's cafeteria in Killeen, Texas last Wednesday, where Police Lieutenant James Whaley says a man had rammed his pickup truck through the front window of the restaurant.
That's the subject had driven through the windows
he got out of his vehicle and began shooting.
Angela Wilson works at Luby's and remembers the gunman.
He had a very blank look. He was kind of calm. It wasn't very fast shots. It was like a shot, and then like he was just kind of randomly picking targets.
These men were having lunch at the time.
All I heard him yell was, "This is payback," and then I just started hearing gunshots.
He would just walk and shoot, walk and shoot, walk and shoot, and pull out another clip, stick it in, and he was just shooting people. Anybody that was at his feet, he would shoot them.
The gunman was armed with 2 9-millimeter semi-automatic pistols, which he emptied and reloaded.
There was no getting away from this guy. He was all over the place. He was in front of the cafeteria, to the side of the cafeteria, and then I heard him into the kitchen, firing in the kitchen.
Police opened fire when they arrived, but said the gunman killed himself. By then, he had killed 22 people and wounded more than 20 others. He was identified as George Hennard of nearby Belton, Texas, where his neighbors said he was pretty much of a loner and acted strangely. One woman, Jane Bug, said he had sent letters to her daughters, and she confronted him.
I said, why are you writing to my daughter? And he said, oh, I've been watching y'all for 3.5 years. And he said, I want to get to know them better. And I said, look, you are scaring me to death. And I said, I don't want any part of this. We need to drop this right now.
These two sisters knew Hennard and say
he just did not like women at all.
Were you scared of him?
Well, I was scared to death. I mean, we all were.
Judy Beach recalls that Hennard screamed at her once when she drove past his house.
Like Tarzan screamed, he called me a bitch as loud as he could possibly say it. With hate in his eyes, I could see. I thought he hated me, and I couldn't even figure out why.
An autopsy reveals that Hennard was not drunk or on drugs at the time of the shootings. They're searching his house for clues to a motive. But so far, Police Chief F.L. Yacomozzi says
he left behind nothing that we have found that would indicate this incident would occur.
Texas Governor Ann Richards joined mourners at a memorial service for the victims of the mass murder. Throughout Killeen, flags flew at half-staff. The founder of the Luby's cafeteria chain donated $100,000 to begin a fund to assist the families of the victims deal with their grief. Coincidentally, the House of Representatives took up an anti-crime bill that would have banned the kind of large-capacity ammunition clips used in the shootings. The measure failed by 70 votes, a major disappointment for the bill's chief sponsor, New York Democrat Charles Schumer.
The tragedy in Killeen, Texas, was emblematic of what we're trying to do here. Every day people are killed with assault weapons in my neck of the woods, 4 last week in Ridgewood, New Jersey. So it happens all the time. One would have hoped that the events in Killeen would have importuned Congress to move.
The National Rifle Association led the various gun lobby groups that had opposed the bill. Unrelated, but no less tragic than the Killeen murders, was the accidental shooting that took place in Columbus, Ohio. An 11-year-old boy got a hold of a revolver owned by the father of one of his playmates and began playing Russian roulette with the boy and 3 other friends. 12-year-old Nathan Conkle recalls,
he pointed a gun at me, and then he clicked it. And he pointed at him. Andre said, if you point that gun at me, I'll kick your butt right now. But he clicked it at him. Then he just pointed right at Geraldo and shot him.
Where'd you shoot him?
Right through the nose and out the back of the head.
The 11-year-old boy was killed. There were major developments in the Middle East. In a reflection of changes that have taken place in the Soviet Union, the Kremlin restored full diplomatic relations with Israel, the first time the two countries have had formal ties since the 1967 Middle East War. And there was an announcement by Secretary of State James Baker.
President Bush and President Gorbachev are today inviting Israel, Arab states, and Palestinians to attend a Middle East peace conference to be held beginning October 30th in Madrid.
No one knows for sure whether all the parties will attend, or if they do, whether or not they'll seriously try to achieve peace in the region. Secretary Baker notes,
all suspicions will not disappear quickly. The gaps are real, and the gaps will not be easily overcome. So we have no illusions about the hard work that lies ahead.
The conference has a major hurdle to overcome, the Arabs demand to get back the land they lost to Israel during the 1967 war, and Israel's demand that the Arabs prove their sincere acceptance of Israel's right to exist as a state. The conference will also provide another opportunity, as we hear from ABC's Vic Ratner.
A mini-summit in Madrid is planned for the Mideast Peace Conference. White House spokesman Marlon Fitzwater says he's certain that Presidents Bush and Gorbachev will meet when both attend the opening of the peace conference in 2 weeks. We're told the president will only be in Madrid for 1 day, then fly back to the United States. But it does give Mr. Bush an opportunity to discuss his new arms reduction proposals in person with Gorbachev, as well as prospects for economic aid to the Soviet Union. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the White House.
Any number of people have devoted their lives to achieving peace, and the Nobel Committee honors a person or group for those efforts. The 1991 winner of the Nobel Peace Prize is a Burmese woman, Aung San Suu Kyi. She became the leader of the opposition to the Burmese military regime after returning to her homeland 3 years ago. She is married to Professor Michael Eris, who is currently teaching at Harvard University.
The cause is simple. It is human freedom. And she has struggled for it, and she has suffered for it, along with many of her people. She is totally committed to this cause, no matter how long they keep her isolated. I know that her spirits are indomitable. She will not give up.
It is unlikely that Eris's wife will be able to go to Oslo to accept the Nobel Peace Prize. She has been under house arrest in Burma for the past 2 years, and has been denied contact with her British husband and their two sons. Not long after a 1989 explosion killed dozens of sailors aboard the battleship Iowa, the Navy concluded that a seaman was responsible because he was despondent over the breakup of a homosexual relationship. The family of the seaman and the man with whom the affair allegedly existed vehemently denied the Navy's findings. And now, as ABC's Herbert Kaplow reports, the Navy has done an about-face.
It was one of the Navy's most embarrassing and tragic moments, and it fell to Admiral Frank Kelso, Chief of Naval Operations, to apologize for naval investigators who suggested it was Clayton Hartwig who caused the gun turret explosion which killed 47 sailors, including himself.
Well, I'm saying that we're sorry that Clayton Hartwig was accused of this incident when we didn't have clear and convincing evidence.
Kelso said the Navy may never learn what caused the explosion. He also indicated there will not be any formal disciplining of the naval investigators. Kelso said he didn't see that anybody had done anything but try to find out what had happened.
At her home in Cleveland, Clayton Hartwig's mother said,
I feel very relieved, and I'm so glad that they finally came out and told us that my son didn't do it.
The family is, however, continuing its $40 million lawsuit against the Navy. And the families of most of the other victims of the explosion also have lawsuits pending. Forest fires have exploded across parts of Washington, Oregon, Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho.
God, I just don't believe it. You know, thank God's what I got on my back, and my kids are in school, and my wife's at work. Just don't believe it.
That man in Washington, just one of hundreds of people forced from their homes by the flames, which charred 250,000 acres in Washington alone. In Atlanta, a judge has resolved a right-to-die case by allowing the patient to live. Superior Court Judge Leah Sears Collins ruled that a hospital cannot disconnect the life support system keeping a 13-year-old girl alive without the permission of her parents. John Talmadge represents them.
It means that they will continue to do what they've been doing since May, sit by the bedside of their child and hope that she recovers.
The teenager is in a near comatose state, and the hospital contends that the sometimes painful efforts at keeping her alive constitutes abusive and inhumane treatment. The week's economic news was generally gloomy, as ABC's Tony Sargent told us.
Industrial production has flattened, partly because American exports have declined. Business leaders have trimmed hiring plans. Consumer confidence is lagging. Thursday's report on September inflation brought the sharpest rise since January.
The rise in the inflation rate means a 3.7% increase in benefits for people on Social Security come January. But that rate is the smallest cost of living rise in 5 years. As far as the nation's jobless, the Senate has come up 2 votes shy of overriding President Bush's latest veto of a bill to extend unemployment benefits by 20 more weeks. And as ABC's Vic Ratner reports...
Twice now, Democrats have pushed a bill through Congress to extend unemployment benefits, only to see their plans frustrated by President Bush. And meanwhile, according to Democrat Sarbanes of Maryland, the number of people who run out of unemployment benefits continues to rise.
There's no state in the union in which people are drawing extended unemployment insurance benefits, even though you have states with unemployment rates of 8, 8.5, 9, and 9.5%.
To break the impasse, Finance Committee Chairman Benson now vows to come up with a new approach, which the president can sign. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
More people at Citicorp will be out of work, although just how many hasn't been determined yet. The news comes as Citicorp, the nation's largest banking company, announced an $885 million loss for the third quarter. The company is also suspending its dividend on its stock. At the heart of Citicorp's problems, bad loans. Among this week's obituaries, that of Tennessee Ernie Ford.
He played his cornpone image to the hilt, and it made him a radio and television star of the 1950s and 60s. Tennessee Ernie Ford called himself the old pea picker, a Bristol, Tennessee boy who never forgot his roots.
I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain.
The country music and gospel music legend recorded more than 80 albums, but he is best known for this 1955 hit single, a tribute to coal miners.
The line, you load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt.
16 Tons sold an estimated 20 million copies worldwide. Last year, Tennessee Ernie was inducted into the Country Music Association's Hall of Fame. Tim O'Donnell, ABC News.
During the 1950s and 60s, Tennessee Ernie Ford had his own TV variety shows. He was 72 when he died of liver disease. From worst to first, that story when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Hi, everyone. This is Alex Trebek. Do you miss reading memorable writing from print magazines because of blindness or other handicap? If so, Choice Magazine Listening, a service of the nonprofit Lucerna Fund, will send you special speed cassettes with 8 hours of unabridged selections from your favorite magazines, 6 times yearly, completely free of charge. Yes, that's right. It's free, and it includes the writings of such authors as John McPhee, Margaret Atwood, Russell Baker, Bill Moyers, Garrison Keillor, and many others. So if you're blind or unable to read regular print, or you know someone with this problem, write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. We'll also tell you how to get the special 4-track cassette player, provided free by the Library of Congress as part of its Talking Book program. Write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050, or call 516-883-8280. Thank you.
A year ago, the Minnesota Twins and the Atlanta Braves were the doormats of their respective leagues. Right now, they're playing each other in the World Series. The Twins rose from worst to first by beating the Toronto Blue Jays for the American League pennant in 5 games, and waited the rest of the week while the Braves polished off the Pittsburgh Pirates in 7. Braves pitcher John Smoltz thinks Atlanta lays claim to the title America's Team.
We were a laughing joke of the world, and right now I think the world is kind of rooting us on, and we're having fun, and hopefully, you know, we can shake that and be a team of the 90s and whatever.
Of course, the Twins have their own ideas about that. And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Tien Trong. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.